seeketh neither to dance nor to stand still. To small virtues would they fain lure and lord me, to the tick-tack of small happiness would they fain persuade my foot. I pass through this people and keep mine eyes open. They have become smaller, and ever become smaller. The reason thereof is their doctrine of happiness and virtue. For they are moderate also in virtue, because they want comfort. With comfort, however, moderate virtue only is compatible. To be sure, they also learn in their way to stride on and stride forward. That I call their hobbling. Thereby they become a hindrance to all who are in haste. And many of them go forward, and look backwards thereby, with stiffened necks. Those do I like to run up against. Foot and eye shall not lie, nor give the lie to each other. But there is much lying among small people. Some of them will, but most of them are willed. Some of them are genuine, but most of them are bad actors. There are actors without knowing it amongst them, and actors without intending it. The genuine ones are always rare, especially the genuine actors. Of man there is little here, therefore do their women masculinize themselves, for only he who is man enough will save the woman in woman. And this hypocrisy found I worst amongst them, that even those who command feign the virtues of those who serve. I serve, thou servest, we serve, so chanteth here even the hypocrisy of the rulers, and alas, if the first lord be only the first servant. Ah, even upon their hypocrisy did mine eyes curiosity alight, and well did I divine all their fly happiness, and their buzzing around sunny window panes. So much kindness, so much weakness do I see, so much justice and pity, so much weakness. Round, fair, and considerate are they to one another, as grains of sand are round, fair, and considerate to grains of sand. Modestly to embrace a small happiness, that do they call submission, and at the same time they peer modestly after a new small happiness. In their hearts they want simply one thing most of all, that no one hurt them. Thus do they anticipate everyone's wishes and do well unto everyone. That, however, is cowardice, though it be called virtue. And when they chance to speak harshly, those small people, then do I hear therein only their hoarseness. Every draught of air maketh them hoarse. Shrewd indeed are they, their virtues have shrewd fingers, but they lack fists. Their fingers do not know how to creep behind fists. Virtue for them is what maketh modest and tame. Therewith have they made the wolf a dog, and man himself man's best domestic animal. We set our chair in the midst, so saith their smirking unto me, and as far from dying gladiators as from satisfied swine. That, however, is mediocrity, though it be called moderation. 3. I pass through this people and let fall many words, but they know neither how to take nor how to retain them. They wonder why I came not to revile venery and vice, and verily I came not to warn against pickpockets either. They wonder why I am not ready to abet and whet their wisdom, as if they had not yet enough of wiseacres, whose voices grate on mine ear like slate pencils. And when I call out, curse all the cowardly devils in you that would fain whimper and fold their hands and adore, then do they shout, Zarathustra is godless. And especially do their teachers of submission shout this, but precisely in their ears do I love to cry, yea, I am Zarathustra the godless. Those teachers of submission, wherever there is aught puny or sickly or scabby, there do they creep like lice, and only my disgust preventeth me from cracking them. Well, this is my sermon for their ears. I am Zarathustra the godless who saith, who is more godless than I that I may enjoy his teaching? I am Zarathustra the godless. Where do I find mine equal? And all those are mine equals who give unto themselves their will, and divest themselves of all submission. I am Zarathustra the godless. I cook every chance in my pot, and only when it hath been quite cooked do I welcome it as my food. And verily, many a chance came imperiously unto me, but still more imperiously did my will speak unto it. Then did it lie imploringly upon its knees, imploring that it might find home and heart with me, and saying flatteringly, See, O Zarathustra, how friend only cometh unto friend. But why talk I, when no one hath mine ears? And so will I shout it out unto all the winds. Ye ever become smaller, ye small people. Ye crumble away, ye comfortable ones. Ye will yet perish. By your many small virtues, by your many small omissions, and by your many small submissions. Too tender, too yielding, so is your soil. But for a tree to become great, it seeketh to twine hard roots around hard rocks. Also, what ye omit weaveth at the web of all the human future. Even your nought is a cobweb, and a spider that liveth on the blood of the future. And when ye take, then is it like stealing, ye small, virtuous ones. But even among knaves, honour saith that one shall only steal when one cannot rob. It giveth itself. That is also a doctrine of submission. But I say unto you, ye comfortable ones, that it taketh to itself, and will ever take more and more from you. Ah, that ye would renounce all half-willing, and would decide for idleness as ye decide for action. Ah, that ye understood my word. Do ever what ye will, but first be such as can will. Love ever your neighbours as yourselves. But first be such as love themselves. Such as love with great love, such as love with great contempt. Thus speaketh Zarathustra the godless. But why talk I when no one hath mine ears? It is still an hour too early for me here. Mine own forerunner am I among this people, mine own cock-crow in dark lanes. But their hour cometh. And there cometh also mine. Hourly do they become smaller, poorer, unfruitfuller, poor herbs, poor earth. And soon shall they stand before me like dry grass and prairie, and verily weary of themselves, and panting for fire more than for water. O blessed hour of the lightning, O mystery before noontide! Running fires will I one day make of them, and heralds with flaming tongues. Herald shall they one day with flaming tongues. It cometh, it is nigh, the great noontide. Thus spake Zarathustra. 50. On the Olive Mount. Winter, a bad guest, sitteth with me at home. Blue are my hands with his friendly handshaking. I honour him, that bad guest, but gladly leave him alone. Gladly do I run away from him, and when one runneth well, then one escapeth him. With warm feet and warm thoughts do I run where the wind is calm, to the sunny corner of mine olive mount. There do I laugh at my stern guest, and am still fond of him, because he cleareth my house of flies, and quieteth many little noises. For he suffereth it not, if a gnat wanteth to buzz, or even two of them. Also the lanes maketh he lonesome, so that the moonlight is afraid there at night. A hard guest is he, but I honour him, and do not worship, like the tenderlings, the pot-bellied fire-idol. Better even a little teeth-chattering than idle adoration, so willeth my nature. And especially have I a grudge against all ardent, steaming, steamy fire-idols. Him whom I love better in winter than in summer. Better do I now mock at mine enemies, and more heartily, when winter sitteth in my house. Heartily, verily, even when I creep into bed, there still laugheth and wantoneth my hidden happiness, even my deceptive dream laugheth. I, a creeper? Never in my life did I creep before the powerful, and if ever I lied, then did I lie out of love. Therefore am I glad even in my winter bed. A poor bed warmeth me more than a rich one, for I am jealous of my poverty, and in winter she is most faithful unto me. With a wickedness do I begin every day. I mock at the winter with a cold bath. On that account grumbleth my stern housemate. Also do I like to tickle him with a wax taper, that he may finally let the heavens emerge from ashy grey twilight. For especially wicked am I in the morning, at the early hour when the pail rattleth at the well, and horses neigh warmly in grey lanes. Impatiently do I then wait, that the clear sky may finally dawn for me, the snow-bearded winter sky, the hoary one, the white head. The winter sky, the silent winter sky, which often stifleth even its sun. Did I perhaps learn from it the long, clear silence? Or did it learn it from me? Or hath each of us devised it himself? Of all good things the origin is a thousandfold. All good roguish things spring into existence for joy. How could they always do so, for once only? A good roguish thing is also the long silence, and to look like the winter sky out of a clear, round-eyed countenance. Like it to stifle one's sun and one's inflexible solar will. Verily this art and this winter roguishness have I learnt well. My best-loved wickedness and art is it, that my silence hath learned not to betray itself by silence. Clattering with diction and dice, I outwit the solemn assistants. All those stern watchers shall my will and purpose elude. That no one might see down into my depth and into mine ultimate will, for that purpose did I devise the long, clear silence. Many a shrewd one did I find. He veiled his countenance and made his water muddy, that no one might see there through and thereunder. But precisely unto him came the shrewder distrusters and nutcrackers. Precisely from him did they fish his best concealed fish. But the clear, the honest, the transparent, these are for me the wisest silent ones. In them so profound is the depth that even the clearest water doth not betray it. The snow-bearded, silent, winter sky, thou round-eyed white head above me, O thou heavenly smile of my soul and its wantonness! And must I not conceal myself like one who hath swallowed gold, lest my soul should be ripped up? Must I not wear stilts that they may overlook my long legs, all those enviers and injurers around me? Those dingy, fire-warmed, used-up, green-tinted, ill-natured souls, how could their envy endure my happiness? Thus do I show them only the ice and winter of my peaks, and not that my mountain windeth all the solar girdles around it. They hear only the whistling of my winter storms, and know not that I also travel over warm seas, like longing, heavy, hot south winds. They commiserate also my accidents and chances, but my word saith, suffer the chance to come unto me. Innocent is it as a little child. How could they endure my happiness, if I did not put around it accidents and winter privations and bearskin caps and enmantling snowflakes? If I did not myself commiserate their pity, the pity of those enviers and injurers? If I did not myself sigh before them and chatter with cold, and patiently let myself be swathed in their pity? This is the wise, waggish will and good will of my soul, that it concealeth not its winters and glacial storms. It concealeth not its chilblains either. To one man, lonesomeness is the flight of the sick one. To another, it is the flight from the sick ones. Let them hear me chattering and sighing with winter cold, all those poor, squinting knaves around me. With such sighing and chattering do I flee from their heated rooms. Let them sympathize with me and sigh with me on account of my chilblains. At the ice of knowledge will he yet freeze to death, so they mourn. Meanwhile do I run with warm feet hither and thither on mine olive mount. In the sunny corner of mine olive mount do I sing and mock at all pity. Thus sang Zarathustra. 51. On Passing By. Thus slowly wandering through many peoples and diverse cities did Zarathustra return by roundabout roads to his mountains and his cave. And behold, thereby came he unawares also to the gate of the great city. Here, however, a foaming fool with extended hands sprang forward to him and stood in his way. It was the same fool whom the people called the Ape of Zarathustra, for he had learned from him something of the expression and modulation of language, and perhaps liked also to borrow from the store of his wisdom. And the fool talked thus to Zarathustra, "O Zarathustra, here is the great city. Here hast thou nothing to seek and everything to lose. Why wouldst thou wade through this mire? Have pity upon thy foot, spit rather on the gate of the city, and turn back. Here is the hell for anchorites' thoughts. Here are great thoughts seethed alive and boiled small. Here do all great sentiments decay. Here may only rattle-boned sensations rattle. Smellest thou not already the shambles and cookshops of the spirit? Steameth not this city with the fumes of slaughtered spirit? Seest thou not the souls hanging like limp, dirty rags, and they make newspapers also out of these rags? Hearest thou not how spirit hath here become a verbal game? Loathsome verbal swill doth it vomit forth, and they make newspapers also out of this verbal swill. They hound one another, and know not whither. They inflame one another, and know not why. They tinkle with their pinchbeck. They jingle with their gold. They are cold, and seek warmth from distilled waters. They are inflamed, and seek coolness from frozen spirits. They are all sick and sore through public opinion. All lusts and vices are here at home, but here there are also the virtuous. There is much appointable, appointed virtue. Much appointable virtue with scribe fingers, and hardy sitting flesh and waiting flesh, blessed with small breast stars, and padded haunchless daughters. There is here also much piety, and much faithful spittle-licking and spittle-backing before the God of hosts. From on high drippeth the star, and the gracious spittle, for the high longeth every starless bosom. The moon hath its court, and the court hath its moon-calves. Unto all, however, that cometh from the court do the mendicant people pray, and all appointable mendicant virtues. I serve, thou servest, we serve. So prayeth all appointable virtue to the prince, that the merited star may at last stick on the slender breast. But the moon still revolveth around all that is earthly. So revolveth also the prince around what is earthliest of all. That, however, is the gold of the shopman. The god of the hosts of war is not the god of the golden bar. The prince proposeth, but the shopman disposeth. By all that is luminous and strong and good in thee, O Zarathustra, spit on this city of shopmen and return back. Here floweth all blood putridly and tepidly and frothily through all veins. Spit on the great city, which is the great slum where all the scum frotheth together. Spit on the city of compressed souls and slender breasts, of pointed eyes and sticky fingers. On the city of the obtrusive, the brazen-faced, the pen-demagogues and tongue-demagogues, the overheated ambitious. Where everything maimed, ill-famed, lustful, untrustful, over-mellow, sickly yellow and seditious, festereth pernicious. Spit on the great city and turn back. Here, however, did Zarathustra interrupt the foaming fool and shut his mouth. Stop this at once, called out Zarathustra. Long have thy speech and thy species disgusted me. Why didst thou live so long by the swamp that thou thyself hadst to become a frog and a toad? Floweth there not a tainted frothy swamp blood in thine own veins, when thou hast thus learnt to croak and revile? Why wentest thou not into the forest, or why didst thou not till the ground? Is the sea not full of green islands? I despise thy contempt, and when thou warnedst me, why didst thou not warn thyself? Out of love alone shall my contempt and my warning bird take wing, but not out of the swamp. They call thee mine ape, thou foaming fool, but I call thee my grunting pig. By thy grunting thou spoilest even my praise of folly. What was it that first made thee grunt? Because no one sufficiently flattered thee. Therefore didst thou seat thyself beside this filth, that thou mightest have cause for much grunting, that thou mightest have cause for much vengeance. For vengeance, thou vain fool, is all thy foaming. I have divined thee well. But thy fool's word injureth me, even when thou art right. And even if Zarathustra's word were 100 times justified, thou wouldst ever do wrong with my word. Thus spake Zarathustra. Then did he look on the great city, and sighed, and was long silent. At last he spake thus. I loathe also this great city, and not only this fool. Here and there is nothing to better, nothing to worsen. Woe to this great city, and I would that I already saw the pillar of fire in which it will be consumed. For such pillars of fire must precede the great noontide. But this hath its time and its own fate. This precept, however, give I unto thee, in parting, thou fool. Where one can no longer love, there should one pass by. Thus spake Zarathustra, and passed by the fool and the great city. 52. The Apostates. 1. Ah! Lieth everything already withered and grey, which but lately stood green and many-hued on this meadow, and how much honey of hope did I carry hence into my beehives. Those young hearts have already all become old, and not old even, only weary, ordinary, comfortable. They declare it. We have again become pious. Of late did I see them run forth at early morn with valorous steps, but the feet of their knowledge became weary, and now do they malign even their morning valour. Verily, many of them once lifted their legs like the dancer. To them winked the laughter of my wisdom. Then did they bethink themselves. Just now have I seen them bent down to creep to the cross. Around light and liberty did they once flutter like gnats and young poets. A little older, a little colder, and already are they mystifiers and mumblers and molly-coddles. Did perhaps their hearts despond, because lonesomeness had swallowed me like a whale? Did their ear perhaps hearken yearningly, long for me in vain, and for my trumpet notes and herald calls? Ah, ever are there but few of those whose hearts have persistent courage and exuberance, and in such remaineth also the spirit patient. The rest, however, are cowardly. The rest... These are always the great majority, the commonplace, the superfluous, the far too many. Those all are cowardly. Him who is of my type will also the experiences of my type meet on the way, so that his first companions must be corpses and buffoons. His second companions, however, they will call themselves his believers, will be a living host with much love, much folly, much unbearded veneration. To those believers shall he, who is of my type, among men, not bind his heart. In those springtimes and many-hued meadows shall he not believe, who knoweth the fickly, faint-hearted human species. Could they do otherwise, then would they also will otherwise. The half and half spoil every whole. That leaves become withered, what is there to lament about that? Let them go and fall away, O Zarathustra, and do not lament. Better even to blow amongst them with rustling winds. Blow amongst those leaves, O Zarathustra, that everything withered may run away from thee the faster. 2. We have again become pious. So do those apostates confess, and some of them are still too pusillanimous thus to confess. Unto them I look into the eye. Before them I say it unto their face and unto the blush on their cheeks, ye are those who again pray. It is, however, a shame to pray, not for all, but for thee and me, and whoever hath his conscience in his head, for thee it is a shame to pray. Thou knowest it well. The faint-hearted devil in thee, which would fain fold its arms and place its hands in its bosom and take it easier, this faint-hearted devil persuadeth thee that there is a God. Thereby, however, dost thou belong to the light-dreading type, to whom light never permitteth repose. Now must thou daily thrust thy head deeper into obscurity and vapour. And verily, thou choosest the hour well. For just now do the nocturnal birds again fly abroad. The hour hath come for all light-dreading people, the vesper hour and leisure hour, when they do not take leisure. I hear it and smell it. It hath come. Their hour for hunt and procession, not indeed for a wild hunt, but for a tame, lame, snuffling, soft-treaders, soft-prayers hunt. For a hunt after susceptible simpletons, all mouse-traps for the heart have again been set, and whenever I lift a curtain, a night-moth rusheth out of it. Did it, perhaps, squat there along with another night-moth? For everywhere do I smell small, concealed communities, and wherever there are closets there are new devotees therein, and the atmosphere of devotees. They sit for long evenings beside one another and say, Let us again become like little children, and say, Good God! Ruined in mouths and stomachs by the pious confectioners. Or they look for long evenings at a crafty, lurking cross-spider that preacheth prudence to the spiders themselves, and teacheth that under crosses it is good for cobweb spinning. Or they sit all day at swamps with angle-rods, and on that account think themselves profound. But whoever fisheth where there are no fish, I do not even call him superficial. Or they learn in godly gay style to play the harp with a hymn-poet, who would fain harp himself into the heart of young girls, for he hath tired of old girls and their praises. Or they learn to shudder with a learned semi-madcap, who waiteth in darkened rooms for spirits to come to him, and the spirit runneth away entirely. Or they listen to an old roving howl and growl piper, who hath learnt from the sad winds the sadness of sounds. Now pipeth he as the wind, and preacheth sadness in sad strains. And some of them have even become night watchmen. They know now how to blow horns, and go about at night, and awaken old things which have long fallen asleep. 5 words about old things did I hear yesternight at the garden wall. They came from such old, sorrowful, arid night watchmen. For a father he careth not sufficiently for his children. Human fathers do this better. He is too old. He now careth no more for his children, answered the other night watchman. Hath he then children? No one can prove it unless he himself prove it. I have long wished that he would for once prove it thoroughly. Prove? As if he had ever proved anything. Proving is difficult to him. He layeth great stress on one's believing him. Aye, aye, belief saveth him, belief in him. That is the way with old people. So it is with us also. Thus spake to each other the 2 old night watchmen and light-scarers, and tooted thereupon sorrowfully on their horns. So did it happen yesternight at the garden wall. To me, however, did the heart writhe with laughter, and was like to break. It knew not where to go, and sunk into the midriff. Verily, it will be my death, yet, to choke with laughter when I see asses drunken, and hear night watchmen thus doubt about God. Hath the time not long since passed for all such doubts? Who may nowadays awaken such old slumbering, light-shunning things? With the old deities hath it long since come to an end, and verily a good, joyful deity end had they. They did not begloom themselves to death. That do people fabricate. On the contrary, they laughed themselves to death once on a time. That took place when the ungodliest utterance came from a God himself. The utterance, There is but one God. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. An old grimbeard of a God, a jealous one, forgot himself in such wise. And all the gods then laughed and shook upon their thrones and exclaimed, Is it not just divinity that there are gods, but no God? He that hath an ear, let him hear. Thus talked Zarathustra in the city he loved, which is surnamed the Pied Cow. For from here he had but 2 days to travel to reach once more his cave and his animals. His soul, however, rejoiced unceasingly on account of the nighness of his return home. 53. The Return Home. O lonesomeness, my home, lonesomeness! Too long have I lived wildly in wild remoteness to return to thee without tears. Now threaten me with the finger as mothers threaten, now smile upon me as mothers smile. Now say just, who was it that like a whirlwind once rushed away from me? Who, when departing, called out, too long have I sat with lonesomeness, there have I unlearned silence. That hast thou learned now, surely. O Zarathustra, everything do I know, and that thou wert more forsaken amongst the many, thou unique one, than thou ever wert with me. One thing is forsakenness, another matter is lonesomeness. That hast thou now learned, and that amongst men thou wilt ever be wild and strange. Wild and strange even when they love thee, for above all they want to be treated indulgently. Here, however, art thou at home and house with thyself. Here canst thou utter everything and unbosom all motives. Nothing is here ashamed of concealed, congealed feelings. Here do all things come caressingly to thy talk and flatter thee, for they want to ride upon thy back. On every simile dost thou here ride to every truth. Uprightly and openly mayest thou here talk to all things, and verily it soundeth as praise in their ears, for one to talk to all things directly. Another matter, however, is forsakenness. For dost thou remember, O Zarathustra, when thy bird screamed overhead, when thou stoodest in the forest, irresolute, ignorant where to go, beside a corpse? When thou spakest, let mine animals lead me, more dangerous have I found it among men than among animals. That was forsakenness. And dost thou remember, O Zarathustra, when thou sattest in thine isle, a well of wine giving and granting amongst empty buckets, bestowing and distributing among the thirsty? Until at last thou alone sattest thirsty amongst the drunken ones, and wailedst nightly, is taking not more blessed than giving, and stealing yet more blessed than taking? That was forsakenness. And dost thou remember, O Zarathustra, when thy stillest hour came and drove thee forth from thyself, when with wicked whispering it said, speak and succumb? When it disgusted thee with all thy waiting and silence, and discouraged thy humble courage? That was forsakenness. O lonesomeness, my home, lonesomeness, how blessedly and tenderly speaketh thy voice unto me! We do not question each other, we do not complain to each other, we go together openly through open doors. For all is open with thee and clear, and even the hours run here on lighter feet, for in the dark time weigheth heavier upon one than in the light. Here fly open unto me all being's words and word cabinets, here all being wanteth to become words. Here all becoming wanteth to learn of me how to talk. Down there, however, all talking is in vain. There, forgetting and passing by are the best wisdom. That have I learned now. He who would understand everything in man must handle everything, but for that I have 2 clean hands. I do not like even to inhale their breath. Alas, that I have lived so long among their noise and bad breaths. O blessed stillness around me, O pure odours around me, how from a deep breast this stillness fetcheth pure breath, how it hearkeneth this blessed stillness. But down there speaketh everything, there is everything misheard. If one announce one's wisdom with bells, the shopmen in the marketplace will outjingle it with pennies. Everything among them talketh, no one knoweth any longer how to understand. Everything falleth into the water, nothing falleth any longer into deep wells. Everything among them talketh, Nothing succeedeth any longer, and accomplisheth itself. Everything cackleth, but who will still sit quietly on the nest and hatch eggs? Everything among them talketh, everything is out-talked, and that which yesterday was still too hard for time itself and its tooth hangeth today out-champed and out-chewed from the mouths of the men of today. Everything among them talketh, everything is betrayed, and what was once called the secret and secrecy of profound souls belongeth today to the street trumpeters and other butterflies. O human hubbub, thou wonderful thing, thou noise in dark streets, now art thou again behind me, my greatest danger lieth behind me. In indulging and pitying lay ever my greatest danger, and all human hubbub wisheth to be indulged and tolerated. With suppressed truths, with fool's hand and befooled heart, and rich in petty lies of pity, thus have I ever lived among men. Disguised did I sit amongst them, ready to misjudge myself that I might endure them, and willingly saying to myself, Thou fool, thou dost not know men. One unlearneth men when one liveth amongst them. There is too much foreground in all men. What can far-seeing, far-longing eyes do there? And, fool that I was, when they misjudged me, I indulged them on that account more than myself, being habitually hard on myself, and often even taking revenge on myself for the indulgence. Stung all over by poisonous flies, and hollowed like the stone by many drops of wickedness, thus did I sit among them, and still said to myself, Innocent is everything petty of its pettiness. Especially did I find those who call themselves the good the most poisonous flies. They sting in all innocence. They lie in all innocence. How could they be just towards me? He who liveth amongst the good, pity teacheth him to lie. Pity maketh stifling air for all free souls, for the stupidity of the good is unfathomable. To conceal myself and my riches, that did I learn down there. For every one did I still find poor in spirit. It was the lie of my pity that I knew in every one, that I saw and scented in every one, what was enough of spirit for him, and what was too much. They're stiff, wise men. I call them wise, not stiff. Thus did I learn to slur over words. The grave diggers dig for themselves diseases. Under old rubbish rest bad vapours. One should not stir up the marsh. One should live on mountains. With blessed nostrils do I again breathe mountain freedom. Freed at last is my nose from the smell of all human hubbub. With sharp breezes tickled, as with sparkling wine, sneezeth my soul, sneezeth and shouteth self-congratulatingly, Health to thee! Thus spake Zarathustra. 54. The Three Evil Things. 1. In my dream, in my last morning dream, I stood today on a promontory, beyond the world. I held a pair of scales and weighed the world. Alas that the rosy dawn came too early to me. She glowed me awake, the jealous one. Jealous is she always of the glows of my morning dream. Measurable by him who hath time, weighable by a good weigher, attainable by strong pinions, divinable by divine nutcrackers, thus did my dream find the world. My dream, a bold sailor, half ship, half hurricane, silent as the butterfly, impatient as the falcon. How had it the patience and leisure today for world-weighing? Did my wisdom perhaps speak secretly to it, my laughing wide-awake day-wisdom which mocketh at all infinite worlds? For it saith, Where force is, there becometh number the master. It hath more force. How confidently did my dream contemplate this finite world? Not new-fangledly, not old-fangledly, not timidly, not entreatingly. As if a big round apple presented itself to my hand, a ripe golden apple with a coolly soft velvety skin, thus did the world present itself unto me. as if a tree nodded unto me, a broad-branched, strong-willed tree, curved as a recline and a footstool for weary travellers. Thus did the world stand on my promontory. As if delicate hands carried a casket towards me, a casket open for the delectation of modest adoring eyes, thus did the world present itself before me today. Not riddle enough to scare human love from it, not solution enough to put to sleep human wisdom, a humanly good thing was the world to me today, of which such bad things are said. How I thank my morning dream that I thus at today's dawn weighed the world. As a humanly good thing did it come unto me, this dream and heart comforter. And that I may do the like by day, and imitate and copy its best, now will I put the three worst things on the scales, and weigh them humanly well. He who taught to bless, taught also to curse. What are the three best cursed things in the world? These will I put on the scales. Voluptuousness, passion for power, and selfishness. These three things have hitherto been best cursed, and have been in worst and falsest repute. These three things will I weigh humanly well. Well, here is my promontory, and there is the sea. It rolleth hither unto me, shaggily and fawningly, the old faithful hundred-headed dog monster that I love. Well, here will I hold the scales over the weltering sea, and also a witness do I choose to look on, thee, the anchorite tree, thee, the strong-odoured, broad-arched tree that I love. On what bridge goeth the now to the hereafter? By what constraint doth the high stoop to the low? And what enjoineth even the highest still to grow upwards? Now stand the scales poised and at rest. Three heavy questions have I thrown in, three heavy answers carrieth the other scale. 2. Voluptuousness, unto all hair-shirted despisers of the body, a sting and stake, and cursed as the world by all backworldsmen, for it mocketh and befooleth all erring, misinferring teachers. Voluptuousness, to the rabble the slow fire at which it is burnt, to all wormy wood, to all stinking rags, the prepared heat and stew furnace. Voluptuousness, to free hearts a thing innocent and free, the garden happiness of the earth, all the future's thanks overflow to the present. Voluptuousness, only to the withered a sweet poison, to the lion-willed, however, the great cordial, and the reverently saved wine of wines. Voluptuousness, the great symbolic happiness of a higher happiness and highest hope, for to many is marriage promised, and more than marriage. To many that are more unknown to each other than man and woman, and who have fully understood how unknown to each other are man and woman. Voluptuousness, but I will have hedges around my thoughts and even around my words, lest swine and libertine should break into my gardens. Passion for power, the glowing scourge of the hardest of the heart hard, the cruel torture reserved for the cruelest themselves, the gloomy flame of living pyres. Passion for power, the wicked gadfly which is mounted on the vainest peoples, the scorner of all uncertain virtue, which rideth on every horse and on every pride. Passion for power, the earthquake which breaketh and upbreaketh all that is rotten and hollow, the rolling, rumbling, punitive demolisher of whited sepulchres, the flashing interrogative sign beside premature answers. Passion for power, before whose glance man creepeth and croucheth and drudgeth, and becometh lower than the serpent and the swine, until at last great contempt crieth out of him. Passion for power, the terrible teacher of great contempt, which preacheth to their face, to cities and empires, away with thee, until a voice crieth out of themselves, away with me. Passion for power, which, however, mounteth alluringly even to the pure and lonesome, and up to self-satisfied elevations, glowing like a love that painteth purple felicities alluringly on earthly heavens. Passion for power. But who would call it passion, when the height longeth to stoop for power. Verily, nothing sick or diseased is there in such longing and descending. That the lonesome height may not forever remain lonesome and self-sufficing, that the mountains may come to the valleys, and the winds of the heights to the plains. Oh, who could find the right prenomen and honouring name for such longing, bestowing virtue? Thus did Zarathustra once name the unnameable. And then it happened also, and verily it happened for the first time, that his word blessed selfishness, the wholesome, healthy selfishness that springeth from the powerful soul. From the powerful soul to which the high body appertaineth, the handsome, triumphing, refreshing body, around which everything becometh a mirror. The pliant, persuasive body, the dancer, whose symbol and epitome is the self-enjoying soul. Of such bodies and souls the self-enjoyment calleth itself virtue. With its words of good and bad doth such self-enjoyment shelter itself, as with sacred groves. With the names of its happiness doth it banish from itself everything contemptible. Away from itself doth it banish everything cowardly. It saith, bad, that is cowardly. Contemptible seem to it the ever solicitous, the sighing, the complaining, and whoever pick up the most trifling advantage. It despiseth also all bittersweet wisdom, for verily there is also wisdom that bloometh in the dark, a nightshade wisdom, which ever sigheth, all is vain. Shy distrust is regarded by it as base, and every one who wanteth oaths instead of looks and hands, also all over-distrustful wisdom, for such is the mode of cowardly souls. Baser still it regardeth the obsequious doggish one, who immediately lieth on his back, the submissive one, and there is also wisdom that is submissive, and doggish, and pious, and obsequious. Hateful to it altogether, and a loathing, is he who will never defend himself, he who swalloweth down poisonous spittle and bad looks, the all-too-patient one, the all-endurer, the all-satisfied one, for that is the mode of slaves. Whether they be servile before gods and divine spurnings, or before men and stupid human opinions, at all kinds of slaves doth it spit this blessed selfishness. Bad. Thus doth it call all that is spirit-broken and sordidly servile. Constrained, blinking eyes, depressed hearts, and the false, submissive style which kisseth with broad, cowardly lips. And spurious wisdom, so doth it call all the wit that slaves, and hoary-headed and weary ones affect, and especially all the cunning, spurious-witted, curious-witted foolishness of priests. The spurious wise, however, all the priests, the world-weary, and those whose souls are of feminine and servile nature, oh, how hath their game all along abused selfishness! And precisely that was to be virtue, and was to be called virtue, to abuse selfishness, and selfless. So did they wish themselves with good reason, all those world-weary cowards and cross-spiders. But to all those cometh now the day, the change, the sword of judgment, the great noontide. Then shall many things be revealed. And he who proclaimeth the ego wholesome and holy, and selfishness blessed, verily he, the prognosticator, speaketh also what he knoweth. Behold, it cometh, it is nigh, the great noontide. Thus spake Zarathustra. 55. The Spirit of Gravity. 1. My mouthpiece is of the people. Too coarsely and cordially do I talk for Angora rabbits, and still stranger soundeth my word unto all inkfish and pen-foxes. My hand is a fool's hand. Woe unto all tables and walls, and whatever hath room for fools sketching, fools scrawling. My foot is a horse-foot. Therewith do I trample and trot over stick and stone, in the fields up and down, and am bedeviled with delight in all fast racing. My stomach is surely an eagle's stomach, for it preferreth lamb's flesh. Certainly it is a bird's stomach. nourished with innocent things and with few, ready and impatient to fly away. That is now my nature. Why should there not be something of bird nature therein? And especially that I am hostile to the spirit of gravity, that is bird nature. Verily, deadly hostile, supremely hostile, originally hostile. Oh, whither hath my hostility not flown and misflown? Thereof could I sing a song, and will sing it, though I be alone in an empty house and must sing it to mine own ears. Other singers are there, to be sure, to whom only the full house maketh the voice soft, the hand eloquent, the eye expressive, the heart wakeful. Those do I not resemble. 2. He who one day teacheth men to fly will have shifted all landmarks. To him will all landmarks themselves fly into the air. The earth will he christen anew, as the light body. The ostrich runneth faster than the fastest horse, but it also thrusteth its head heavily into the heavy earth. Thus is it with the man who cannot yet fly. Heavy unto him are earth and life, and so willeth the spirit of gravity. But he who would become light and be a bird must love himself. Thus do I teach. Not, to be sure, with the love of the sick and infected, for with them stinketh even self-love. One must learn to love oneself, thus do I teach, with a wholesome and healthy love, that one may endure to be with oneself, and not go roving about. Such roving about christeneth itself brotherly love. With these words hath there hitherto been the best lying and dissembling, and especially by those who have been burdensome to every one. And verily, it is no commandment for today and tomorrow to learn to love oneself. Rather is it of all arts the finest, subtlest, last, and patientest. For to its possessor is all possession well concealed, and of all treasure pits one's own is last excavated. So causeth the spirit of gravity. Almost in the cradle are we apportioned with heavy words and worths, good and evil. So calleth itself this dowry. For the sake of it we are forgiven for living. And therefore suffereth one little children to come unto one, to forbid them betimes to love themselves. So causeth the spirit of gravity. And we bear loyally what is apportioned unto us, on hard shoulders over rugged mountains. And when we sweat, then do people say to us, yea, life is hard to bear. But man himself only is hard to bear. The reason thereof is that he carrieth too many extraneous things on his shoulders. Like the camel kneeleth he down, and letteth himself be well laden. Especially the strong load-bearing man in whom reverence resideth. Too many extraneous heavy words and worths loadeth he upon himself. Then seemeth life to him a desert. And verily, many a thing also that is our own is hard to bear, and many internal things in man are like the oyster, repulsive and slippery and hard to grasp. So that an elegant shell with elegant adornment must plead for them, but this art also must one learn, to have a shell and a fine appearance and sagacious blindness. Again it deceiveth about many things in man that many a shell is poor and pitiable, and too much of a shell. Much concealed goodness and power is never dreamt of. The choicest dainties find no tasters. Women know that, the choicest of them, a little fatter, a little leaner. Oh, how much fate is in so little! Man is difficult to discover, and unto himself most difficult of all. Often lieth the spirit concerning the soul. So causeth the spirit of gravity. He, however, hath discovered himself who saith, this is my good and evil. Therewith hath he silenced the mole and the dwarf who say, good for all, evil for all. Verily, neither do I like those who call everything good, and this world the best of all. Those do I call the all-satisfied. All-satisfiedness, which knoweth how to taste everything, that is not the best taste. I honour the refractory, fastidious tongues and stomachs, which have learned to say aye, and yea, and nay. to chew and digest everything, however, that is the genuine swine nature. Ever to say yea, that hath only the ass learnt, and those like it. Deep yellow and hot red, so wanteth my taste, it mixeth blood with all colours. He, however, who whitewasheth his house, betrayeth unto me a whitewashed soul. With mummies some fall in love, others with phantoms, both alike hostile to all flesh and blood. Oh, how repugnant are both to my taste, for I love blood. And there will I not reside and abide where everyone spitteth and speweth. That is now my taste. Rather would I live amongst thieves and perjurers. Nobody carrieth gold in his mouth. Still more repugnant unto me, however, are all lickspittles, and the most repugnant animal of man that I found did I christen parasite. It would not love, and would yet live by love. Unhappy do I call all those who have only one choice, either to become evil beasts or evil beast tamers. Amongst such would I not build my tabernacle. Unhappy do I also call those who have ever to wait. They are repugnant to my taste, all the toll-gatherers and traders and kings and other landkeepers and shopkeepers. Verily I learned waiting also, and thoroughly so, but only waiting for myself. And above all did I learn standing and walking and running and leaping and climbing and dancing. This, however, is my teaching. He who wisheth one day to fly must first learn standing and walking and running and climbing and dancing. One doth not fly into flying. With rope ladders learned I to reach many a window. With nimble legs did I climb high masts. To sit on high masts of perception seemed to me no small bliss. To flicker like small flames on high masts, a small light, certainly, but a great comfort to castaway sailors and shipwrecked ones. By divers ways and wendings did I arrive at my truth. Not by one ladder did I mount to the height where mine eye roveth into my remoteness. And unwillingly only did I ask my way. That was always counter to my taste. Rather did I question and test the ways themselves. A testing and a questioning hath been all my travelling, and verily one must also learn to answer such questioning. That, however, is my taste. Neither a good nor a bad taste, but my taste, of which I have no longer either shame or secrecy. This is now my way. Where is yours? Thus did I answer those who asked me the way, for the way it doth not exist. Thus spake Zarathustra. 56. Old and New Tables. 1. Here do I sit and wait, old broken tables around me, and also new half-written tables. When cometh mine hour? The hour of my descent, of my down-going, for once more will I go unto men. For that hour do I now wait, for first must the signs come unto me that it is mine hour, namely the laughing lion with the flock of doves. Meanwhile do I talk to myself as one who hath time. No one telleth me anything new, so I tell myself mine own story. 2. When I came unto men, then found I them resting on an old infatuation. All of them thought they had long known what was good and bad for men. An old wearisome business seemed to them all discourse about virtue, and he who wished to sleep well spake of good and bad ere retiring to rest. This somnolence did I disturb when I taught that no one yet knoweth what is good and bad, unless it be the creating one. It is he, however, who createth man's goal, and giveth to the earth its meaning and its future. He only effecteth it that aught is good or bad. And I bade them upset their old academic chairs, and wherever that old infatuation had sat, I bade them laugh at their great moralists, their saints, their poets, and their saviours. At their gloomy sages did I bid them laugh, and whoever had sat admonishing as a black scarecrow on the tree of life. On their great grave highway did I seat myself, and even beside the carrion and vultures, and I laughed at all their bygone and its mellow decaying glory. Verily, like penitential preachers and fools, did I cry wrath and shame on all their greatness and smallness.